Welcome to this week's Monday meeting. Today is April 1st, 2024. We're not going to f*** with you. Don't worry. It's just a regular show. Monday meetings are a chance for motion designers from around the globe to connect, ask questions, share inspiration, and engage with industry-leading artists on a level playing field. I'm your host, Mark Cernozzi, and also with us today is co-host Jen Van Horn. And today we'll be discussing understanding the brain's response to animated content. It's a big one. Mm-hmm. So please have your questions, topics, tips, whatever you want to talk about ready. If you have a question, please use the raise your hand button in Zoom to be called on. And if you're unable to ask your question, type question into the chat and we'll ask them for you. And as usual, this call will be recorded. So if you have any concerns about something that was said on the call, let us know at the end and we will chop it out of the podcast release. And then a few opening topics before we get going here. Thanks to all of the Patreon supporters. We see you. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. We only have one tier, really, and it's like $5 a month. So thank you for all of the support on that. And over to Camp MoGraph Australia. Tickets still available. Still getting excited about that. So if you have any questions or thoughts on that, go to campmograph.com.au. And then finally, we also have Camp MoGraph USA in Chicago, September 12th through 16th, and that's presented by Otoy. So big up to all the sponsors. We got some more sponsors last week. So this year we have Otoy, Maxon, Sony, Grayscale Gorilla and Stash Magazine. So please support them if you don't already. They make fantastic stuff. And if you don't know what Stash Magazine is, like, be sure to go to their website and check it out. It's really kind of like the cream of the crop for motion stuff. So if you kind of get overloaded looking at all like social stuff and trying to find reference and all, this is kind of like a nice go-to spot to just find some really high-level stuff, stashmedia.tv. So the tickets for that will also go on sale April 20th, which is a Saturday, and that will go on sale at noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific time. So definitely set your alarms. But stoked to get everything going with camp. And yeah, just thanks to everyone who supports. So, moving on to today's topic, you know, we're always trying to find certain things that might be, I don't know, more engaging or topics that we haven't covered before. You know, we've been doing Monday meeting for many years now, and there's a lot of same topics that come up week after week, or a lot of same questions, which is totally understandable, but it's sometimes nice for us to steer the conversation in a certain direction. And so some things that I've been thinking of over the past couple of weeks, just through some projects and whatnot, was how your brain responds to animated content. And obviously there's best practices for design and layouts and all the stuff like that, that, you know, make more sense to your brain. Like, think of rule of thirds and composition and stuff like that. But I'm really curious to know if anyone else has thoughts or anything kind of along these lines. And let me just start off with one thing that I've been trying to figure out longer than I care to admit, but with our short attention spans these days and our content being what, 6 seconds, 15 seconds, maybe even 10 seconds, I think we have up to 3 seconds now to like grab someone's attention. Mm-hmm. And so trying to figure out kind of best practices for, like, say you're doing a 15 second spot, or heck, let's just even say a 6 second spot, and you have a few messaging things you have to get through, like taglines or logos or product, whatever it may be. Like, what is that minimum viable time something needs to be on screen for you to like register that, you know, to read and stuff like that? And so through some of my research, from what I've researched, the human brain can identify images for as little, or like images it sees in as little as 13 milliseconds, mm-hmm. which is pretty insane. But for text, if you want to comfortably read it, it should be on the screen for a minimum of a second and a half to 2 seconds. And that's per line. Okay. Oh, wow. And this would allow readers enough time to read the text, but also kind of digest what it's saying. Mm-hmm. So take that with you, you know, with a grain of salt, because obviously, like, fast messaging is eye grabbing and attention grabbing, and maybe flashing some of that a few times could add up to a second and a half. I don't know. I just think this is a really interesting topic, especially with how fast everything's moving these days, both figuratively and literally. But like our short attention spans, the amount of content we have to produce and the amount of messaging that needs to be produced in such a small window. So, yeah, I would love to kind of open it up to the group and hear of any like thoughts, tips, tricks, anything you've run into, any problems or anything like that regarding this. So, Jen, I see your hand up. So why don't you start us off today?
Yeah. Going off of that, when I was doing ads and we had to break down 30 second, 15 second and 6 second, 3 of those seconds was the end card because we needed that time at the end. So it's like, well, OK, but that just gives me 3 seconds of content leading to the end card. So we tried to do more 9 second ones when it was better. But also, like, I have TA'd for After Effects Kickstart and Animation Bootcamp for School of Motion. And we do talk about legibility and tricks you could do for things. If it can only be on screen for a short amount of time, then you're going to have to be worried about like scale, the font that you're using, making sure it's nice and chunky. So you're capturing it that quickly to read that. And when does it make sense to have a few words at a time? You don't want like a whole block of text because then that's just overwhelming. There's a lot of sort of subtle nuance to the design of text on screen for sure. And yeah, with short attention spans, building off of that, knowing some of the psychology behind why we're attracted to animation is a good idea. Knowing what color theory is going to evoke which emotion is going to be big for that. And if you think about it, most of us grew up with animation, like totally saturated our lives with Sunday morning cartoons to, you know, early PC games and educational content. And if you see now, it's pretty much all animated kids' educational content for a reason, you know. So being able to kind of draw on any kind of nostalgia is good because we already have certain, you know, associations to video game noises, you know, so putting, you know, familiar noises that you, mm-hmm. you know, don't need a copyright for in stuff is going to be more effective. And, or even just like the bouncing timing of a Mario track that sounds similar, you know, like we anything that you can kind of like grab onto that, you know, that your audience, you know, if you know, like sort of like their age group. So like I'm 38. So it's like anywhere between like early 30s, late 40s is going to be sort of like we grew up with that like golden time of animation. It's not too hard of a stretch to think of stuff like that. Even when you're doing like a social media ad, it's still effective. You know, anything you could throw at it to make it instantly recognizable is going to be totally the way to go. And I love the history of animation too. So I've been just like digging into stuff. I've been like last couple of weeks, I was obsessed with all of the Viz VE Pop, Hell of a Boss and Hazbin Hotel animated content. This last weekend, I re-binged BoJack Horseman. So it's just, I've been getting into the stuff where it's like adult content and adult subject matter, like mental health and depression and that sort of thing. But seeing it through an animated lens, it's been trippy. And so it's just really got me thinking about character design and evoking emotion, no matter what platform, if you're doing ads versus actual, entertainment content. That's been on my brain lately too. That's my gist.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Does anyone else have thoughts on this? And honestly, it can be the entire spectrum of like what, how your brain reads certain things. I mean, it's one of those things that I think unless we think about it, we probably don't even register some of the stuff we do. Right. Mm-hmm. I see Ben and then Ilya next. Happy Monday, Ben.
Happy Monday. Good to see everyone. So I work on a fair bit of ad graphics. And one of the things that we talk about on the teams that I work with is like readability and like, how long would it take you to say the text out loud? Mm-hmm. If you were to read it, and a lot of people read very quickly if they don't have to speak, but if they're vocalizing it, it'll take them a certain long period of time. So if there's a big piece of text on the screen, if you can say it out loud by the time it disappears, then the timing is about right. And that's, again, a sliding scale, but I think that's kind of like a good rule for text. For visuals, it's kind of like all over the board because it's very much dependent on the motion, the direction of the motion, where your eye is going to be. And you kind of have to feel it out. I mean, I'm sure there's more science to it than that, but I think as creatives, we're all kind of like, we can feel when something's right. And if it's not, then we try to like articulate what isn't right about it and then try to walk towards those right solutions. But it's all very subjective. And it's very hard to like quantify and like list out rules without like boxing yourself in. Like you want to have enough creative freedom without having to think of like the psychology of everything. And like, it's very artistic, at least in my experience.
Yeah. Sure. No, thank you so much for saying that, because I fully agree. Like, I mean, there's so many things where like, say you're animating on the beat of something, right? Like you actually might need that action to happen like three frames before the beat actually hits, because it just doesn't feel right. Like, sure, technically it triggers right at the beat, but when you watch it, it feels late, right? Or like whatever it may be. So yeah, it's always, I feel like that's kind of a nice, way to look at it through a lens of, sure, that scientific lens, but then that's where your creativity really starts coming into and like your artistic intuition. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but something a computer can't really do, right? So I feel like there's...
It's not just reading it, you're processing it.
You know the rules
it.
To break them, right? Yeah, but you also don't want to be trapped in it.
You're also processing what you're reading, so you need that few seconds ahead of time to like catch up. So like right. Even like Brian said too, like in the chat, lip sync is the same kind of thing. If you can get like a frame or two ahead of it, it's a good idea. And like I do explainer videos a lot, so I'm also trying to think of the VO. I don't want exactly the VO on screen. There's also a study that I watched like a TED talk about this, about how educational content, when you're doing a presentation, you don't want to be saying exactly the words that are on screen, because it's, you get like sort of overstimulated when you're viewing that content. And so you want to break mm-hmm. it down into really basic messaging and keep it to a minimum, because you don't want someone reading something and not listening. You know, you have to kind of find that happy medium.
Yeah. Ilya, happy Monday. Happy Hop on Monday. In. How you doing?
Doing good. So I work a lot on like short form content for the web and like logos and like anniversary logos with some sort of taglines. And I deal a lot with, you know, how long something has to stay on screen to be comfortably understood. So my approach has been always, there has to be contrast between whatever you are animating and whatever text there is. It has to be like very clearly legible. And also when there is multiple lines, I work a lot on the sequence of how everything appears. So the animation sort of flows with the text. And when you work on like, you know, when you go to websites and you see like a little animation that explains a particular feature of whatever is being sold, mm-hmm. Those deal a lot with sort of diagrams, flow charts and text. And again, sequence of things appearing and then disappearing, it's very, very important. But in general, I agree with what everyone said here. Like, I usually go by a rule of thumb of 2 seconds for something to be read and understood, especially in the context of every other piece of text and animation that appears on the screen. Mm-hmm. So that's been my experience. But yeah, contrast and sequence of things. That's my 2 cents.
Yeah.
I also like sound effects too, and you can get a sound effect a couple frames ahead before you see what's making the sound effect. I love that in editing when they really have that forethought between transitions.
Augustine, happy Monday. Pop on in.
Happy Monday. Sorry to be late.
Oh, you're good.
I just wanted to like chime in to remember everybody that like all of this is very subjective.
Yeah.
Like all these rules. You know, because if we would all apply all these rules constantly, then everything would be timed and sequenced like the same and the readability would be the same. And we've seen in animation, and I'm going to say animation is not only motion design, I'm using like a very broad spectrum since the early beginnings with Saul Bass in title design and then like crazy punk experimentation where it was like on celluloid and stuff like that. Sometimes those like completely destroyed any of the rules we're mentioning now. And it still worked.
Yeah.
Or at least that medium found like a certain public, like a crowd to appreciate it. And it's to me, this it's also like music. So there's music maybe for you, like goes too fast or like, the instruments playing together, you don't get it, but some other people will click with them. So don't be too like married to these rules. These rules are meant to, like, of course, if you have like a mission, which is like people need to be able to read it for this and this and this, there's like guidelines you can follow. But like, even then, those can be sometimes broken, like in films also, to create an effect or create a surprise or keep people awake. Because for training, like, I don't know where I was reading this, that if you keep like the same pace for your training, for example, people will fall asleep no matter what you do, because it's like a repetitive sequencing, like again and again and again and again, and people will start like falling asleep. So you
been there, done that.
Yeah. So at some time, yeah, exactly. So at some time you have to break that structure with something that gets people's attention again. And same applies with everything, with films, trailers, whatever. It's like those rules are meant to be broken.
I agree, but I also agree that you need to know what the rules are to effectively break them. And know when to exaggerate. So foundations and like in design animation, hugely effective.
I can say yes, but I also can tell you that I've seen people that I like have done incredible art and they never learned any of those rules.
Well, that they know of. But you're thinking about the influences that we have, that we're growing up saturated with animation. So we're seeing what the rules are ahead of time. So it's in our brains already. And that's also why a lot of animators also have some sort of tie to music. We have this natural sense of rhythm. A lot of us are. So I don't know. I feel like influence in.
No, sure. I'm just saying it's like kids, you know, kids have no notion of anything. And so they are free to explore in ways we are sometimes like locked because we're too much into these rules and things and cadence and stuff. And and some artists had no prior experience with film or animation and they made like incredible pieces, completely weird and alien. But I think that's what set them free. So that's what I'm saying. Like there's both, And sometimes chaos can be your friend, you know, like.
I agree. I mean, I actually enjoyed my art before art school way more than my art now. It makes me sad. So I've been trying to get back to what gave me that freedom before and try to think about how. But also now that I know the rules, now I know how to make my stuff better. But I still want to get back to that. I used to do neon right in like crazy colors. Like I had I didn't follow any kind of crazy rules back then. But how do we effectively get back to that? You know, once we already know.
Well, and like this is like somewhat of a hot take from my perspective, but like a lot of the stuff we do is advertising and messaging for brands and companies. And so like in my head, as much as I want to make something fucking super cool, like what was that title sequence a couple years back? That was all just like, blah, blah, blah. I forget what it was, but it was very out of the box. As much as I want to do that, I'm trying to sell a product for a company. And like they need to make sure the website is readable, and they need to make sure that their tagline's on there for whatever. Like, so there's all these almost like outside like marketing rules that are given to you almost within that brief, right? Within that creative brief, it's like, we need this, 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 whatever. But like, it's hard for me to break those rules. So sometimes it is hard to like take a step back and play, right? Because like I'm so much in my head of like, oh, well, this needs to stay on for like a second and a half if it needs to be legible and or readable, and you know. And sometimes I like get myself so technically scientific on that that I'm losing my artistic kind of excitement about it, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, in my head, I'm trying to solve the problem and give my client the best thing that's going to help them sell. Even though to me, it's like, well, does that thing really need to be on screen for fucking 3 seconds or whatever you want, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm always juggling stuff like that. So it's like, not only do you have your design rules and principles and stuff, but then you have brand guidelines and what's in the creative brief and like all these other things too, that you kind of have to adapt and you know, try these rules, try to adapt these rules to those guidelines.
I'd say that's
a lot of words.
That's a great upsell for A/B testing, though. If you want to test out something a little more zany here, that, you know, trying to convince a client to try a few different things and analyze.
Elise, and then Cons. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. I agree with what you said. I studied web design for a little bit, and it was always like, you don't want to go too crazy because people need to know how to use your website. So you don't want to make it too different. They have the standard layouts that everyone's used to. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to bring up how we're so oversaturated with content these days, where people are just scrolling through videos that I'm trying to notice like what people do to get people to stop and actually look at them. Like when you're on TikTok and you can just easily scroll to the next one. And I don't necessarily like this, but I notice that what a lot of people do is they make something that looks wrong. Like when you see the video, like it could be like someone pouring like ketchup on a sandwich or something that's weird. And you're like, what's going on? Like, what is this video? And it makes you stop for a second and like try to like analyze it. So maybe there's something equivalent that we could be doing in the design world, or it's just like it's something that like looks totally bizarre and like just catches you because it's so weird or out there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like we need like a tasteful like shock value thing.
Yeah, it's a disruptor.
Yeah, it's something shocking. I agree, because it's just like a barrage of media just constantly at us, and we need something that like pulls us out of that. Like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's what's kind of created some room in the social framework of things for all that scammy shit, right? Like, I will teach you, like, I will show you, like,
yeah. Oh,
it's so tiring.
It is very tiring. And then another thing I wanted to bring up about, like, how there's this, the norm of, like you said, that like this is how you do things, and we all need it to be like recognizable for people to understand. Sometimes, like when people take risks, you know, that creates the new norm. It makes me think of like how the Into the Spider-Verse movies, I feel like they really popularized that look. And now, like for so long, people were saying, we need to have more stylized 3D. We don't need it to look like realistic. And no one was willing to take that risk. And now that they have, it's almost like, oh, now we got to make everything look like that.
Yeah. I feel like, no, that's a great point.
Mitchell versus the Machines. Like, I think I watched that movie like 3 times in a row because I was so inspired by it. But at the same time, like, I get overstimulated so easy. And I think during most of that movie, I'm like, I literally have to break this down in chunks just to absorb it correctly and see all of the background stuff. But I love that.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, one thing I'll say too, Elise, in terms of like capturing that attention is that there's so much of that now. It's like hard to figure out something that is going to shock someone and like engage them into that content. You know, like there's so many different things, like you won't believe what happens next or what, right? Like all the tactics. And I wonder if that's like just made it harder for us as creatives, right? To like really capture that attention because it's so oversaturated with so much shock and awe out there with, like you said, like ketchup on your hair and or something. Like it's like, wait, what is happening? Oh, you want me to buy a course? Okay. But yeah, that's a great point. Thanks, Elise. Cons and Augustine.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I think this is definitely like a very interesting conversation about like our actual content. I know there's been a lot of like interesting topics lately, but I think like from a design perspective, like for like the Mark, your initial question of like how long to keep text on screen, I was always sort of told to be able to read it 2 times. Sometimes like we, you know, we're making something and we can read it, but then somebody else watches it, they can't read it as quick. For short form content, I don't know, like it might be a little bit different, especially with like looping, right? If it's going on socials, maybe they could like read it a second time anyway. I don't know. Or sometimes you like, and you start at the end of the loop kind of thing, right? So it could be quick in the beginning, but you kind of get the longer read at the end, you know, so to speak. So it loops. Definitely interesting when like people kind of come up with like weird social media hacks for content and stuff. But throughout this whole conversation, I kind of like what Augustine was talking about with like, I guess like the history of like design and like kind of like punk stuff with like people kind of going outside the boundaries and getting kind of more experimental. And I think that kind of like that kind of makes a lot more sense with like if you think about if you're stuck kind of like in the box, so to speak, of like where we've been. I think it might help to think about how like motion works and how like how movement kind of pulls at our like ancestral kind of like strings, right? Like early man, right? Like looks out in the Sahara, is like nothing's moving, it's our static, and then something happens that's like cause for alarm, right? So it's like now we're talking about like short form content. It's sort of like doing things that are like weird outside the norm is kind of doing that thing that like gets our attention, whether it be like a visual thing like the ketchup video, or even like the ketchup video is actually like more of like a mental thing that's being pulled on, right? Where it's like something that's just completely outside the box. But yeah, it's hard because it's like there's so much content. It's like a content soup. How do you make something that's just like a new color or something, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just food for thought. If you think your stuff is like too much in the box, it's like just think of the weirdest thing and see how could that maybe work.
I don't get the whole, like, I've seen so many ads where it's just like gross out bathroom humor, and I'm like, I don't need that. But they're using that as a dress wrapper, and you find out, oh, it's a game that is not connected at all to this thing that is in my feed. It was trying to be a disruptor. I'm like, maybe there's other ways we can do that. Like, well, I'd rather watch a ketchup sandwich. For sure.
Well, I think in these days too, one of the ads that stands out in my mind from attention grabbing was the Coinbase one from Super Bowl 2 years ago with just the QR code bouncing around. Like a screensaver. It was so plain and like boring that it was attention grabbing, right? And especially in like the context of Super Bowl ads, when everything's like superhero this, celebrity that, blah, blah, you know, just having a black screen with a QR code bouncing around was pretty impactful, I thought. So it's almost sometimes we can really flip the script, right? And go so basic that it's, you know, attention grabbing.
I have something to even top that, because there's a book called, I remember in school, it was like in the curriculum, but it was, I found it so fascinating. It's called Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. I don't know if anybody's heard of this story about, it was like a toilet paper. I don't think it was Charmin, but some big brand toilet paper way back when in early advertising. And it was like a very annoying, like, randomly this guy would pop out and say like, hey Whipple, squeeze this, and it'd be like, it had this weird connotation, but he's always be squeezing the toilet paper, and everybody thought this was so annoying, like literally like the whole public was like, this is like, I hate when this commercial comes on. But the company did so well because it's almost like everybody like knew about it, you know. So it's like that, like even farther to what you're saying, Mark, like you could even make something that's horrible, so to speak, and it still sells.
Yeah, I just posted a link to that in the chat.
I don't know if y'all have seen this recently, but I think this is almost like a happy accident, but someone found on like this old Casio keyboard the sound for Taco Bell, where with like the bell at the end of all their commercials, like boom, and it's been all over social media, like people with the keyboard, like hitting the Taco Bell sound. And it's like, what a brilliant, like, you know, I mean, it was so a happy accident, but little things like that have really just, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm sorry. It's Monday, but like, it's just crazy how like something like that can just take off and go. Right. And now it's a whole thing for Taco Bell, and that didn't even planet, but it's just that one little sound, right?
Yeah. No, anyway. Sound is extremely effective. I was watching some YouTube thing I'm subscribing to, and they use the Yoshi tongue noise, that sound a lot in that thing. And I was like, I think I'm just gonna subscribe just so I can hear that noise a lot. It makes me so happy.
Augustine, hop back in here.
Yeah, we were talking about, like, you know, the content fatigue and all these like things. And I think that part of the fatigue comes from all that like trials to shock you, to grab your attention. Like a lot of people are not like anymore genuinely interested. So like they're watching just for the sake of watching and not like looking for something. And so to me, like the demise of this strategy of trying to grab your attention or like shock you is that like, it grabs your attention for like half a second, but then as soon as you realize that in fact that was all that was they were trying to do, then for sure I don't want to see your content anymore. You know, it's like for example the YouTube like stills where everybody's taking a picture of their face and like having these like horrible like faces like going like, oh my god, and then the title is like how to do budget on a company, and you're like, what the fuck, you know, like. And it's like for everything, like even like Motion Hatch has those for their thing. I was even tempted to send a message to Haley and say like, hey, look, like your courses are cool and like you have a good attitude. Like those images like are hard. And I understand why, you know, like the algorithm and everything, but at some point, if we don't ourselves do something to change that, it will never change and it will go worse and worse. Like I've decided for what the videos I'm going to output soon, I'm not doing anything of that, like faces of going like, you know, like it's just like something minimalistic, designed, elegant, and that's it. And people that will go and watch it will go and watch it because they really want to watch it. And they will maybe pass it on to somebody else. And those people will go and watch it because they want to watch it or are interested or they were recommended. But it's not like, I mean, that's my take. It's like trying to grab the attention of somebody that in the beginning is probably not interested in your thing. It's like spending a lot of energy into something that leads to nowhere. So why do it, be honest?
I don't know, Augustin. I would love to see just like a really hokey clip of you in a motion tracking suit just dancing, like not actually tracking anything, but just in a suit. I would totally click on that. That would be amazing. I don't care what you're talking about. If I see you dancing.
I think I need to start making all my thumbnails with like pug eyes and like, you know, right?
No,
like,
dude.
Big googly eye.
Again, we can be disruptive with these things. Like I've seen things that have success and none of them are using those metrics of doing weird images and start with a shocking statement and sounds that go like, doo, doo, doo. And it's like you're just saying like, hey, let's do accounting. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is accounting. Like, it's not like, it's not Mission Impossible. There's not Tom Cruise like appearing on the view like, hey, guys. Like, no. Like,
in a world where QuickBooks is.
You know, exactly. So, I mean, you can do a joke here and there, but at some point, like, be on point with what you're doing. Otherwise, you're a clown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like clowns. To kind of keep on this topic a little bit too, since we have a great group today. Thanks for all of you for showing up. What are some tips and tricks that you use in your workflows or in your projects that are like attention grabbing tricks, right? What are some things that you do where like, whether it's text or logos, or if you're trying to grab attention, like, are there certain motion things you do? Are there certain transitions? Are there colors? Are there flashes? Whatever. I'd be curious just to source our group today and anyone who has tips or tricks or little things that they want to share, we'd love to hear it. So Jen, why don't you start?
I do a lot of character explainer type stuff. And my biggest rule for myself and every single student I have ever TA'd for is I make those eyes blink. And when I can, I add eyebrows because it's just even a very simple character. If I have a little eyebrow raise when I'm like, they're blinking and they come back up, or they just have one eyebrow raise and a little bit of a smile. Like there's so many small little things you can do that evoke so much emotion in character expressions. I also study micro expressions of body language just to make me a more effective character animator. And I feel like that's sort of my superpower. I can make something really simple feel like it's evoking a lot of emotion just from those like little minor things. And there's nothing creepier than a character that's not blinking at you. So I hate that so much.
What do you mean, Jen?
Oh my God, makes my eyes water. That's my trick I always do. That's the first thing I do before I animate. I have a whole eye rig system I set up usually for all my characters.
Yeah. Anyone else have any tips, tricks, thoughts, any things they like to do? Grab attention. Also, I mean, I'm thinking too, like YouTube pre-rolls. I mean, 6 seconds, it goes by really fast. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of us have worked on those before. And, you know, are there any, even if it's not an advertisement, are there any things that you do within your videos to like try to grab that attention within the first 3 seconds? Do you, you know, start with colors? Do you start with a logo? Do you start with like a question? Stuff like that.
All of it.
All of it.
It depends on the content.
Yeah.
I do like when it poses a question, though. I do like that, because then you're thinking of an answer. You just can't help it, other than if you just read a statement and you're like, oh, okay, I would keep scrolling. But if someone asks me something.
Well, so let me pivot away, since there's not a whole lot of like interest in the tip and trick thing. But the question I'll go to is this. In the last, what, year, two, three, every video now has subtitles or captioning, right?
I've noticed that.
And I can only guess it's because a lot of people watch without sound and want to, like, you know, they're laying in bed or something, you know? But even outside of like social content, I've seen it, YouTube, even like I've seen people watch movies now with fucking subtitle, like the captions on. I'm like, really? Like, to me, that's really hard because it takes me out of the story because I'm reading. Like, even if the captions are there, I'm reading, or like,
especially when they're wrong,
paying attention to the actual visuals. I'm like reading it like a book almost.
Yeah. I hate when they're wrong. I feel like I've seen a lot of subtitles that are just completely not getting it right. And that takes me out of it.
Well, I guess I don't know if there's subtitles or captions, or I don't know. Like, I guess it's the same thing. But anyway, food for thought there. Ben and then Luis.
So I think of like the starting point of a lot of the stuff I make as like, what if this was the thumbnail for this video? Like, and if it doesn't look nice, static, or it doesn't like entice people to think like, what could this video be? Then it's probably not a good way to start the animation, because it's going to look boring or flat or whatever the case might be. And there's a lot of different ways that you can make it enticing, whether that's with the lighting, hinting at what's to come, things like that. But like a lot of times, like when you're uploading something like Instagram, you get the option to set what the thumbnail is. And by default, it might select like the very first frame of the thing that you're uploading. So if that doesn't really look good, then you're scrubbing the timeline to like find that one frame that's going to make people like want to get into it. You can always change it, change that the way it starts.
That's super interesting and a great point too, because yeah, like if you're scrubbing your timeline to find like an enticing thumbnail out of your entire video, but maybe it's the last like 10 seconds of your video that you select your thumbnail from, the chances of that viewer actually getting to that thumbnail in the timeline is probably slim if the first few seconds aren't captivating enough or like, right, like attention grabbing enough. But that's a great point. Luis, happy Monday.
There you go. For some reason, it wasn't clicking. Okay, I just wanted to follow up on the subtitles not matching. I was watching The Sopranos, and I like to watch everything with subtitles on, especially when they have accents. And so I'm like watching it, and what they say in the subtitles are like abbreviated versions of what they're saying, you know, verbally. Mm-hmm. And it's really frustrating. Like, it actually like makes me irrationally angry about that. And anyways, you just mentioned that, and I just wanted to like chime in on that, because I had to like just completely stop watching The Sopranos because I don't know. I'm like, kind of upset about that.
Oh.
Anyways, that was it.
No, I totally get that. I do get irrationally angry too. And it's completely like the word is like, that's not it. No, what? Yeah. And then 3 seconds go by. Yeah, I guess not that hard. Although now I think you can upload your own subtitle tracks, which is helpful. And you could stylize them and make them really nice. Premiere actually does a really great job scanning audio now. And so you can go in and make those changes.
And actually, I think you can edit via that mode now.
Yes.
Like you can, you know, chop a bunch of just via text, which is quite interesting. Augustine and then Vishal.
Yeah, I think I'm going to like sort of be like, it's something we've already discussed in previous calls, like, and I'm beating like a dead horse, but is you have to, like, I'm convinced that you need to be you. And I'm going to take something from Chris Daw. He was saying in one of his talks, and he said, like, do you call, like, somebody that you manage to, whatever, how, grab his attention for 3 seconds, and then he watched your 6 second bumper. Is that your audience? Like, do you call that your audience? That's just like a casual viewer and probably won't follow you in the long run, if you want. Because the next thing you're going to do probably won't catch his attention unless you do Mr. Beast, which every day he's blowing bigger things and burning entire cities. And I don't know where it's going to stop, because that's his mechanics. It's like, that's his way of grabbing attention, like making something even like more gigantic each time. But like a lot of us first don't have the cash flow for that. And secondly, like it leads to burnout. So what's the audience you want to have? It's like, you want to have some like people that are just like interested in you for half a second, or people that will like grow to love you through time, and will like stay with you, because that's your base. Like, those are going to be your, I'm going to call followers, but like those are the people that will support you and will stay in your Patreon, in your thing. Like, you know, like, no, I'm not going to say no matter what, but as long as you keep doing what like triggered their interest, they're going to be around and they're going to be interacting with you and stuff like that. Like, having the attention of somebody that you have no idea why you got his attention, there won't be any interaction. Like, your numbers, one thing might do big numbers and then the next one might flop completely, which destroys your thing. So I'm all for the long game, you know, like, do stuff that is yourself and that will connect with people. And you won't make like 100 millions or like billions viewers maybe, but if that helps you like grow your community and sustain your models, that's, to me, that's enough. Mm-hmm. Like, unless you want to be the next Mr. Beast, but that's another story.
Well, I think Mr. Beast is also a pretty interesting like case study with all this, because talk about the psychology of what's working in film, in like YouTube, whatever. I heard like he spends like hundreds of thousands of dollars on the thumbnail per video, right? Like, I mean, so I think he's an interesting case study if we want to try to dive a little bit deeper on like the psychology of kind of these social platforms, YouTube kind of algorithms, what's working, what's not. And I do have one more point I want to make, and I'll make it at the end, because I think it's a nice way to kind of like put a bow on this topic for now. But I think this is a really good topic to keep revisiting, because I feel like this is constantly changing, right? And like, there are these rules, there are these things that are made to be broken, but these rules are ever evolving as well.
Yeah,
Ryan, also, I saw you had your hand up. Feel free to jump in if you would like.
Yeah, I think Mr. Beast is just a great example of that too, because he kind of pioneered that, like, as aggro and in your face and super fast cuts and slamming VFX and all the like giant eyeballs and all that stuff. But I was just reading recently that like that stuff is not working as much with his audience anymore. So he's actually going and hiring legit editors that have worked on like music videos and at agencies to come in and give him like advice on how to still keep his voice and his style, but scale back. And his last two or three videos, and his he has a separate channel that's like a charity channel that has a totally different vibe. It's still him. He's still in it. But I think that's like, it's just proof that A, you can't be at full volume 100% of the time, all the time. Like, someone said like you need a breath to absorb stuff at some point. But also I think like to that whole point of tastemakers that's been going on in the chat too, like he's a tastemaker and now everybody has been following his lead for the last year or two. So it's not just him and his channel overloading the circuit. It's like 90% of all the other people who follow him who are like, I don't know anything about editing, but this guy's successful, so I'm just going to ape him And now like he's being forced to change his voice and the way he presents things because of his success. I think that's like literally what happens in motion design, right? Like everybody did deer heads and dripping paint. And then all of a sudden it's like, what, we got to do something else. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's every 2 or 3 years, it's the next thing. But that's the thing that I fear right now is that we're losing that sensibility, not to bring AI back into it, but we have been getting tons of decks where clients are telling us what it's supposed to look like. Hey, we did this thing in Midjourney and this is what it's supposed to look like. Can you make this for this price and this time and make it move and make it look, you know, reasonably like realistic or reasonably lifelike and charming? And I think like we're really on that verge of like, you know, if the idea and the content and the visuals are going to be served up to us on a plate, you know, like I saw a couple of people say earlier on the chat, they're like, well, only 1% of the people are tastemakers. I'm like, but that's what motion design's always been, right? It's a good portion of the people in motion design, at least on the advertising side, drive what advertising is. And then that gets populated. And then we go off and work on the next thing and try different things and come up with ideas. And then we sell it to somebody who's, you know, brave enough to put it on air. And then that becomes a thing. And then you get True Detective and Double Exposures for 4 years in orange juice commercials, right? But then you go back and you should cook up the next thing. But it feels like there might be a little less of that. And there's also just the danger of everything else coming in, you know, from outside. So it's all a great conversation. It's so much better than just listening to Finn and to learn Houdini or Rive. So I appreciate everybody like talking about that stuff. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we all have seen that, you know, the future is obviously going to be, you know, like holographic blue glowing things everywhere, right? Like HUDs everywhere. Like, right. John Lepore has kind of already dictated that. But it's funny how like a lot of stuff we do, you start seeing brands and things adopt that, you know? And so it's pretty crazy. Elise, why don't you hop in?
Thank you. I just wanted to bring up that the way that people are getting paid also influences this, like the way that they're formatting these videos, because what's most important to people sometimes is just the number of clicks their video gets. So it doesn't even matter like what is in the video. If they can get someone to click on it, then they've succeeded. And then I remember like YouTube or TikTok, they changed the way that their people were monetized. So they started having to keep people's attention for longer. And that made people rethink like, I can't just get people to watch this for 5 seconds. I need them to watch it for like a whole minute or something. Also, like if your goal is just to get the most people to watch it, you're like successful in that way. But then if your another goal could just to be very genuine and get like people coming back video after video, and just the way that you're like your mindset is like how you're going to make money can influence the way that you're making things.
Oh, for sure. And I, you know, honestly, I feel like that comes through like a long line of like history of PR firms and all these things that were like, oh, your photo was in People magazine, therefore you had 40 million impressions. It's like, what? Sure. You know, sell that in or whatever, you know? And I feel like it's kind of the same, like, especially brands are like, wait, we got over 1 million views. Amazing. And we sold 3 products. You know, it's like, cool. Like, what are we trying to get views or are we trying to sell products? Like, what's the success here? You know?
Yeah. And
so I think, yeah, go ahead.
I hope, and I think that there will be a shift. That there will be a shift to being more genuine with and getting like people, like with AI, you know, it's all, you know, there's like not a person behind this, it's all very like cold. So there maybe we'll shift back to just like seeing things that are, we'll appreciate things that are real and people that are making like a genuine connection with you and not trying to clickbait you into something.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's probably similar to what Ryan was alluding to there too with Mr. Beast. Like, I think as audiences, we're all maturing and growing up. And, you know, that
are we?
Well, maybe, but like that cycle seems to be shortening every cycle, right? So, like, Mr. Beast, crazy good, but like, if his audience is starting starting to get kind of bored of it or whatever. Like, he had a great run for a handful of years, right? He's crushing, still crushing it, but like, he's going to have to reinvent himself. And, which honestly is great. Like, if we were all just fine and like, we're okay with the status quo and everyone just doing the same thing over and over and over, it would be fucking boring. Right. But, all right. Well, so let's wrap it up. This has been a fantastic call. Mm-hmm. The one thing I wanted to like, just kind of tie this up with was, we often talk on Monday meetings about like our worth, right? Imposter syndrome, generalist versus specialist. And I want to say this, look at what we're talking about today, right? Like, look at all of these like scientific kind of psychological things that go into our decision-making, right? Mm-hmm. Can AI, can a computer do this? Maybe at some point, but like, this is where we interject our human part of it, right? And like, I don't know. I just think it takes a lot of skill and talent outside of being on the box to like think through all of these for a successful campaign or for a successful video. And I think a lot of people within marketing or whoever's hiring you to make the videos, I mean, fuck, even studio owners, whatever, like, don't think this nuanced in terms of like, oh, that text needs to be on screen for, you know, 36 frames. Okay. If it moves from left to like, these are the minute detailed fucking decisions we make all the time in all the stuff we do. And so when we talk about our worth as generalists or versus specialists or whatever it may be, like, keep in mind, you have all of these decisions and all of these talents as well. And it's not just moving keyframes on a timeline, you know? And so I say that kind of as like an encouraging thing for all of us, especially with all the AI and all this. These are like the human decisions that we're making. And to go all the way back to the beginning of the call when Ben made the point of about like, it could be like, technically correct, but it doesn't feel right. And you need to go in and make changes until it feels right. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the way we really separate ourselves from any of this like computer generated stuff, is we can feel it. The computer won't feel it. The computer will know that it's animating on the twos or it's animating on whatever, and it will be technically perfect, mm-hmm. quote unquote, but it won't feel right. You know, and so hopefully that kind of keeps us working in jobs. I don't know.
So you're saying like,
but I think it's a, go ahead. Sorry.
So you're saying like marketers, instead of technical artists, we're more art directors than.
Yeah. But I would say just don't sell yourself short, because it's not, we make so many decisions that are like higher than just an artist. Right. Like, I mean, we're dealing with a lot of different psychology things and design and sound. Like, just think about everything that we've talked about today. Mm-hmm. And when you're animating something, you're probably making 100 of these little decisions in your head through that day that you're working, you know, but you never really talk about it because it's just kind of part of the job. Right. And it's not really all that cool to talk about because you can't really show it, right? Like, it's not like, wow, look at that beautiful render. No, it's more just like, what's going to resonate with the viewer? And I don't know, maybe there's some deeper shit we should get into with this, and maybe we can find like an expert or someone that would be a little bit more versed in all this, with maybe like a doctorate or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
let's get experts. But yeah,
this is really
here.
Cool.
I would
love to do more of stuff like this, because I feel like These are kind of the topics that no one fucking talks about. Like, we can talk about like what makes a good reel and what all day long, but so does everyone else, you know? And I think trying to like dive deep a little bit more could bring people value. I don't know.
I'd really like to talk about effective sound design, because I think that's really interesting between like Foley and music and like how you enhance it and how cutting to music's always been a really cool thing for me. So if anyone knows of anyone we can reach out to talk to about that, who does really, maybe who just does sound design for motion design.
We'll reach out to the Sanctus guys.
Oh yeah. Let's talk to Sanctus. Like, yeah, for sure. Cause they're Camp MoGraph thing in Portland. That was really fun when we got to go into the woods and record stuff. Like,
yes, I'm sure Wes and the crew over there would be totally down to hop on one of these calls and do that. So let's add it to the list and we'll get them scheduled up. I do want to just say a couple quick housekeeping things before everyone jumps off. Next week, we'll probably have a show and then we'll probably be off the following week. I'll be at NAB. I think Jen's going to be at NAB.
Yep.
So I love you West Coast people, but I'm not going to be up at 7 a.m. but yeah. And like, we'll do that. So pay attention to socials and the Discord and whatever for any other updates with that. But we'll probably do next week and then take the following week or maybe two off even just to like get a little recoup. We'll see.
But yeah, give us a break.
Totally. But thank you all for joining again. You know, we do this because of you all, and we appreciate you all being a part of it. So thanks for joining. You can find us on all the social media platforms except for Instagram. I'm still locked out of the Monday meeting account, even though I did get back into my Facebook. So anyway, audio for the calls will be posted each week on your podcast app of choice. And available with show notes in the description and in the website or on the website, mondaymeeting.org. So until next week, have a great week. Thank you all. Kick some ass and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.